Thank you very much. It is a pleasure to be here this morning. I was telling Lina and Cheryl before that, you know, what do we do for somebody's yard site? What's considered special? What's something nice to do for somebody's yard site? So it's different for men and for women, what they could do, but this is for sure the best thing, that we have the yard site of Shimshon Shmuel Shlomo Ben Rafal Moshe, and to get together on a Sunday, you know, to discuss some Torah, how we could grow, how we could gain from something, and that is the best someone could do for somebody's yard site. The Sfarim tell us, it's written down, that a malach, an angel, is considered an omeid. Someone who is a person, not a person, but an angel stands still. An angel can't go higher or lower in their level of spirituality. But Adam, a person, is a mahalach. A person is traveling. A person is always going. A person is going either up or is going down spiritually. And the Sfarim tell us that somebody who's not alive anymore is also an omeid. They're standing still. They can't. They fulfilled however many good deeds they fulfilled already. They're finished. They can't go any higher, any lower. But the rabbis tell us that it's not necessarily true. If a person has children or students, but for sure children that continue in their ways and follow the Torah's laws because in the honor of their father or mother, then that person in Shemayim, in heaven, can still go even higher. And this is true for sure if somebody was religious, but even if theoretically someone was not religious, if they are doing something for the purpose of their father, let's say on a yard site like this, this is a way that somebody who's no longer alive can still go even higher and higher in Gan Eden, in Shemayim. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman tells us there's an expression that bra kara d'avua, that a son or a daughter or a child is an extension of the parent. And literally it means they're the foot, the kara d'avua, the foot of the parent, of the father. So why the foot? It should just be the arm, it's an extension. Or Rabbi Chanan Wasserman tells us that it's this idea, that even if a person is on a certain level in Gan Eden, in the heavens, but if their child or their sons or daughters continue their Torah ways, then it's like their foot, that because of them they're able to travel and to go even higher and higher. So definitely this gathering this morning should be a schus for the neshama, an aliyah for the neshama, that the neshama should continue to go higher and higher, even though he's no longer with us, but in his merit he should be able to go higher because of the people in this world that are gaining from such special acts. It's written in Megillah Esther. Purim is approaching very soon, in a few days. So it's written in Megillah Esther, in Perek Gimel, Mishneh Ches, that when Haman is telling Achashverosh that the Jewish nation, you should get rid of them, he tells them that Yeshno Am Echad is one nation that's Mefuzar Umeforad, that they're scattered and they're spread out. So the simple understanding is that Haman is telling Achashverosh that they're spread out, is that you don't have to worry about them rebelling, and you know, if you attack them, you don't have to worry, they're not all strategically together, you have nothing to be concerned about. But the rabbis tell us that really Haman was telling us something much deeper, that the Jewish nation was mufuzar umufarad, they were scattered and spread out, meaning that they didn't have achdus, they didn't have unity. And there was arguments, there was conflicts between the Jewish nation, and in that, because of that, they didn't have the merit of the achdus, of the unity, to keep them together. And therefore you could go ahead and you could try and destroy them because there's no togetherness amongst the Jewish nation. You don't have to worry, their God is not going to protect them. And the commentaries tell us that you would think it's incredible, you would think just the opposite. If you have a nation that's a minority, that's very few amongst many, many, many other Gentiles, so you would think they would stick together and they would, you know, grab together with each other if they're a minority. But no, even though they were minorities, still they didn't stick together and they didn't have that merit to keep them together. Esther, when she became the queen, she said she knows how to take care of this. She said, Leich kenosas kala Yehudim, you have to gather all the Jewish nation and you have to bring them together to bring them into unity. So that's something that we need to learn from the holiday of Purim, now how the Jewish nation was separated, and the only way we were redeemed was when we got back together. So that's something that I just want to focus on today, and it's something that you touched upon, how friendly and taking care of other people and being concerned for other people. Why is it that people don't get along? Why is it that the Jewish nation, so many times we find that people don't get along with each other, whether it's on a one-on-one basis or if it's different groups in the Jewish nation? Why do we find that so many times people do not get along? And the reason is because people do not consider themselves one with the other person. They don't consider themselves brothers and sisters with the other person. They think that I'm you and you're me, and I'm me and you're you. And I don't have to worry so much. I don't have to be so concerned with the other person. As long as I take care of myself, I'm okay. But the Gemara tells us, there's an incredible story. We're talking about before telling stories. The Gemara says an amazing story. Really, the Rishonim bring it down, an amazing story. It's a Gemara in Menachos, Taflamet Zayin, and Tosus over there says, there's a story of two brothers, that there was a man who passed away, and as you know, when a person passes away, so we have the person has the inheritance. And there were two men who came to King Solomon, to Shlomo HaMelech, and they came with to the following question, that one of the brothers said that there's two brothers, me and my brother, so we should each get 50% of the inheritance. And the other brother, Tosfos says that the other brother had two heads. And the person who had two heads, he says, no, I'm two people, so I should get 66.6% of all the inheritance. Another brother said, no, you should get 50-50. So, you know, what's the ruling? Is that person considered one person, or is he considered two people? So they came to King Solomon, and King Solomon said, I have a great idea. He took a bag, he took a bag, and he covered one of the heads of one of the people, and he poured hot water on the other head. And when he saw that both heads screamed out, so then he said, oh, if both heads screamed out from pain, then obviously you're all one person. And if you're all one person, then you get only 50%. And this is a great lesson to us, that if a person sees the pain of somebody else and they're crying out, then that shows that you consider yourselves one with the other person. But if you don't cry out when you see the pain of somebody else, then you're separate, you're somebody else. And that means you have distanced yourself from that person. And that we see that if a person sees pain in another individual, especially a Jew, then the only way they could feel the pain of the other person is if they consider themselves one with the other person. There was one time a basketball player in the NBA, and I'm not going to say what color his skin was, but he was a basketball player in the NBA, and his coach had said that he's selfish. So of course the media, they wanted to to write up a story. They need stories, so they went over to this guy, to this player, and they said, you know, your coach says you're selfish. You know, what do you have to say about that? He says, well, I don't know what he's talking about, because I don't care about anybody except for myself. So of course, what he meant was that, you know, he's not selfish, he doesn't care about himself, but if a person, all he does is care about himself, then that's the ultimate, you know, that means that a person's selfish, he doesn't care about anybody, he just cares about himself. So I'll tell you two amazing stories about what it means to care about somebody else. Even somebody who's at, you know, a lower level, like a child. This story happened with a boy who he got married, and he was a chassan, and he spoke at his Sheva Brachas. And he said that there was a story that happened to him when he was a child in the third or fourth grade that always made a lasting impression on him, and that's why he is who he is today. He said he was in school, and one of his classmates brought in a new fancy watch. I don't know how fancy it was, you know, third or fourth grade, but he brought in a new watch. And his parents told him that he shouldn't bring it into class, you're going to lose it, you shouldn't take it. But of course, you know, this child, he was very proud of his new watch that he got, whether it was for Hanukkah, Afikoman, or something. So he brought it in, and when he went out to recess, he left it on the table. He left it on the desk, because he didn't want to take it out. So he left it on the desk. Afterwards, he came back in from recess, the watch was gone. And, you know, he complained to the Rebbe, you know, that my watch is gone, my parents are going to kill me, I wasn't supposed to bring it to school, what am I going to do? So the Rebbe said, you know, Rebbe was in the class the whole time, he knew nobody else came in. So he knew only one of the students in the class must have taken it. So he said, everybody line up. So everybody lined up against the blackboard, and he said, put your hands up, you know, not stick them up, but I'm going to check through your pockets, I'm going to see who has the watch. And this boy says, this chassan says, that he was the one who took the watch. And he was petrified. He's going to be embarrassed, his Rebbe's going to catch him, what's he going to say, and how's his friend going to, you know, his friend's going to beat him up. So he was the third person on the line out of about, you know, 20 kids. So his Rebbe goes over to person number one, he checks inside his pocket, goes into person number two, checks inside his pocket, goes into his pockets, and he checked his pockets, and he didn't stop over there. He checked the fourth boy and the fifth, he checked all 20 boys. After he was finished all 20 boys, he said, okay, you could all sit down, I have the watch. And he took out the watch and he gave it back to the boy. But such genius that he could have stopped after the third person, and he would have been very embarrassed, and who knows, he would have lost his friendship with this boy. But this Rebbe, he wanted to make sure that this boy is not upset and not insulted. And he did something wrong. He could have insulted him, but he made sure that even for a little child, that he made sure to be concerned for the feelings of somebody else. And he said that this had such an impression on him, how this Rebbe took care of him and didn't make fun of him. And he said he decided back then, you know, he wanted to grow up to be like this Rebbe. And he said that that was an inspiration for him, that, you know, to see how somebody cares for somebody else. Another amazing story that happened with a boy that I know. This boy was at my wedding. When he was growing up, he's a special needs child, and he had to go to a special school. But on Sundays, he was able to, you know, Sunday afternoons, he was able to go to more of a mainstream school to sit in on some classes and to play with, you know, the boys, and, you know, to get some friends and to go at least to feel good, you know, to go to some of the mainstream yeshivas, you know, at least once a week. So he came on a Sunday morning, and the boys were playing recess. This became a famous story. It's one of my stories from my father, Rabbi Pesach Kron. The story became, you know, a famous story. And he came with his father, and the boys were playing recess. So his father asked, you know, can my boy Shaya, his name was Shaya, can he be involved in the game? So he said, yeah, you know, one team was losing like 15-2, you know, playing baseball. So he said, yeah, put him on the losing team, you know, they're losing anyway. You know, obviously this boy didn't know how to play any sports. So he said, fine, put him up last. As the innings went on, this team started to catch up. And it was 15-8, 15-10, 15-12. It came the last inning, and the bases were loaded, and it was turned for Shaya to be up. I see, you know the story? It was turned for Shaya to be up. And what are they going to do? They already promised him that he could be up, and now they have a chance to win the game. So the pitcher, who I know the pitcher very well, I went to yeshiva with him, and he moved closer. And he took the ball, and he underhanded it to Shaya. But of course, still, Shaya swung and missed. There was no way he was going to hit. He wasn't good at all. Another boy helped him take the bat, and, you know, to hold the bat together with him. The pitcher moved up even a few feet further, and he underhanded to him. And the boy, together with this other boy, you know, he tapped the ball a little bit, you know, in front of home plate. The pitcher picked up the ball. He very well could have thrown the ball to first base and got him out, and the game would have been over. But instead, he took the ball and he threw it over the first baseman's head, and he threw it into right field. And everyone was screaming, Shaya, run to first, Shaya, run to first. Shaya didn't know what it means to run to first, so they pushed him, you know, which direction, to first base. You know, he ran to first. The right fielder, he saw what happened, what the pitcher had in mind, and he could have thrown him out at first, and he started running to second. He could have thrown him out at second, but instead he understood what the pitcher was doing. He threw the ball way over the second baseman's head, and everyone started screaming, Shaya run to third. He ran to third, and they were running after the ball, and everyone started running around Shaya run home, and everyone was behind Shaya. He ran home and he picked him up on his shoulders, and Shaya became the hero. And even a special needs child, meaning we have one story with a child and then one story with someone who's a little older, but he was a special needs boy. And to show that, you know, the game is not what's important, but to care for every single person, and everybody, you know, deserves to be made to feel good every once in a while. I told this story somewhere else. I live in Passaic. I told this story at an event for third and fourth graders with their fathers in one Matzah Shabbos in Passaic. And a guy came over to me, a friend of mine from Passaic. He says he was the left fielder. He says he was there at the time. He was the left fielder. And he said the story had happened exactly like that. And he said it was such a Kiddush Hashem just to feel somebody, you know, just because you have an opportunity to make somebody, you know, to put somebody down. A person needs to be careful to always have in mind, you know, to be careful with someone else's feelings. We say in davening in the morning, those of us who have an opportunity to daven, we say Elu Dvarim Sha'adam Ochel Perasayim Ba'olam Hazeh Va'Karen Kayemus Olam Abba. That's a phrase that you'll be familiar with. Now, there's many different opinions how much a woman is obligated to daven every day. There's opinions in the Rishonim. I actually just taught this last week. I teach in the Beis Yaakov in Passaic. I'm in 11th grade, so I was just teaching these halachos as far as what a woman is obligated to daven every day. So somebody who's married, or somebody who works, and they're very busy, and they don't have the time to daven the full Shemona Esrei once or twice a day. So there are opinions what a woman is allowed to daven, but the basics that a person should really try to find to be able to daven is the brachos, the brachos ha-shachar, the brachos ha-torah, and the brachos ha-shachar in the morning. Even if a person has kids in the house and they have, you know, they're working and they're running out and they're not going to get them back till after sunset, at least, you know, the Berachos HaTorah, the Berachos HaShachar, those few brachos, a person should be able to find the time to say. So it just takes a few minutes. So that phrase, that was brachos, of Elu Dvarim Sh'Adam Ochol Peruseim Balam Hazeh, there are certain things that a person reaps the benefits in this world, V'Hakeren Kayemest Olam Abba, and they get reward in the next world as well. Meaning most mitzvos, most positive commandments that we fulfill, we get the reward in the next world. Only in the next. Schar mitzvos b'haya malaka. We don't get the reward in this world. Except for these mitzvos. These mitzvos have the reward in this world and in the next world. Why? What is special about this list of mitzvos? So the Gemara tells us that these mitzvos have benefit to people, and it's a benefit to Hashem. Meaning a benefit to Hashem is obvious because it's one of the mitzvos, so we're listening to Hashem's commandments. But these mitzvos have a benefit to other people as well. So if you go through the list, some of them are pretty obvious how they have a benefit not only to Hashem, but also they have a benefit to other people. Some of them are not so obvious. You take a look at the list over there, some of them are not so obvious. How is it a benefit to other people? One of the mitzvos on that list, you'll recognize, is Iyun Tefillah. To have kavana by davening. When a person davens, we all know, we're all good people, and we all try not to space out during davening, but it happens to the best of us that a person doesn't have kavana during davening, and it's our job, it's our responsibility to try to have kavana during davening. But one of the things that is beneficiary to other people as well is having kavana during davening. Why is that? Why is that that's considered a benefit to other people if I have kavana during my own personal prayers? So the simple understanding is that you'll notice that all the davening is in plural. It's a lashon rabbah. Rifa einu, selach lanu, baruch aleinu. All of davening is in plural. So when we daven, if we have the proper kavana, we're not just davening for ourselves. We're davening for everybody. We're davening for all of Klal Yisrael. So that's a benefit, not just to me. That's a benefit to other people as well. That's the simple understanding what the commentaries tell us. And that's very nice. But it's something that we need to keep in mind, that when we daven, we shouldn't be davening only for ourselves. We should be davening for other people as well. And that's why the Iyun Tefillah is considered a benefit to other people. We all know people that are in dire situations, that need help, whether it's Parnassah, whether it's a Refuah Shalema. We can't just daven only for ourselves. We have to be able to daven for other people as well. And if you look at that list, the truth is that there are other things over there as well, such as Bikur Cholim, visiting the sick. So you think, okay, that's pretty obvious. You know, you visit the sick, that's obvious how it's a mitzvah to Hashem, but it's a mitzvah to other people as well. But a person has to keep in mind, when you're visiting somebody else, somebody, let's say, in the hospital, or someone who's sick in bed at home, it's not just that they're your mitzvah. That, you know, here, oh, I get to do the mitzvah, Bikur Cholim. A person needs to be careful what they say when they're visiting sick people. You know, a person comes to somebody in the hospital and says, oh, who's your doctor? Oh, that's your doctor. He's not a good doctor. I don't know why you're using him. You know, what do you mean? This person's already using that doctor. A person needs to be careful how they tell people, what they say people in the Bikur Cholim. My father knows people that they came in the hospital, and they tell them, oh, you're so lucky you're here in the hospital. You have air conditioning, and you have your meals served to you. You don't have to fight the traffic. You know, you don't have to go to work. Like, don't tell me I'm lucky, okay? I'll do anything to be out of here. Person, and they're not bad people. It's just a matter of being sensitive to what you tell people. It's the same idea, but when a person comes to be Menachem Aval, you have people that are sitting Shiva, and Nichum Aveilim is something that you want to do, and it's a chesed, and you want to do chesed to people, and whether you knew the person who passed away, or whether you knew the person that is sitting Shiva, and you come, and you feel like you need to say something. You know, you sit in there, it's a little bit awkward, and you know, you don't want to only say Hamakam Menachem Eskam, you want to say something besides that. So you feel like you need to say something, but people say something that are just so inconsiderate. Again, they don't mean something bad. I know somebody who told me that he was sitting Shiva, and his father passed away on Matzah Yom Kippur, the night after Yom Kippur finished. And the Gemara tells us in Ksubis, the Gemara then the Ksubis says that if somebody dies Matzah Yom Kippur, then all his Averos were forgiven. All his Averos were forgiven because Yom Kippur happened, and then the person died, so all his Averos were Mechaper, were forgiven. So this person, his father passed away on Yom Kippur. On Matzah Yom Kippur. So someone came to be Menachem Aval, and he said, wow, your father passed away on Matzah Yom Kippur, what a schus, it's so special. So he said, thank you very much, mitzvah Hashem by you. And he, like, don't tell me what a schus it is, you know, that his father passed away. Now the person, of course, he meant it well, that, you know, your father must have been a tzaddik. Evidently he didn't know his father, he didn't have much to say besides that. So he's like, don't tell me how special it is that, you know, his father passed away. My aunt told me, you know, unfortunately my uncle passed away a few years ago, and my aunt told me that, you know, of course she was at the levaya, at the funeral, and they had the hespedim, the eulogies, and someone came over to her and said, oh, it was worth it to come just to hear the hespedim. And, you know, my uncle was a Rosh Hashiva, was a very special person, so my aunt said, she was so insulted, what, it's worth it for my husband to die so you could, you know, you could hear the eulogies? And of course, that's not what the person meant, that's not what the person said. The person, not that the person, that the uncle, my uncle should die, because that once he already died, say, he probably was hard for him to come, but it was worth it, you know, for him to come to hear the eulogies because they were so special. But my aunt took that to mean that it was worth it for my husband to die. You know, a person, when a person is in a such a situation, a child, a special needs, someone who's sick, someone who's sitting shiva, something like that, a person has to be so extra careful, sensitive, how, you know, how a person says. And my father, my Rav Pesach Ron, he's a mile, you know, I got it from him. My father's also a mile, and I should say I'm also a mile. And my father always says a story. He says in his speeches a story about someone one time came to my father's mechutin, meaning my sister's father-in-law, and he was from Montreal. Someone said something about Montreal. Okay, so my sister's father-in-law, the last name is Pfeiffer. He's from Montreal. So he's once met a person who was from Queens, and So my sister's father-in-law said, "Ah, from Queens, you know my chutin, I have a Pesach Kron." So he said, "Yeah, he's a mile. He did my son's bris, but I would never use him again." So my, you know, I was like, "Okay, you know, like, well, you know, fine, you know, you didn't want to ask why or something like that." You know, my father's a great mile, you know. So this person, my Mr. Pfeiffer, he told my father. He said, "By the way, you know, so and so, I met this and this lady, and you should just know that, you know, I'm sure, you know, you didn't do anything wrong, you know." "Oh, no, I'm sorry." He said, "Yes." He says, "Why wouldn't you use him as a mile? He's a great mile, he's a great person." He said, "No, I would never use him again because he called me a crybaby." He says, "He called you a crybaby?" He says, "Yeah, he called me a crybaby." So he was like, "Okay, you know, I know Rabbi Kron, you know, he's a nice man, you know, I don't, you know, you're sure it was Rabbi Kron, maybe it was something." No, it was Rabbi Kron who called me a crybaby. So Mr. Pfeiffer called my father. He said, "Listen," he says, "I'm sure, you know, there's some misunderstanding, but, you know, she says, you know, you called her a crybaby, you know, I just want to, you know, just let you know, you know." So my father's like, "Okay, you know, I don't remember, this was a number of years ago, I, you know, can't imagine that I did that, I mean, besides, it's not a nice thing to do, to call someone a crybaby, but, you know, it's not good for business, you know, you call the mother of a baby a cry, you know, a lot of times the mother of the baby's crying, and you were great by the bris, you know, you were fine, but a lot of times the mother is cries more than the child." So my father said, "Okay, thanks for telling me, you know, I'll be careful." A few weeks later, my father's at a bris, and the mother was crying, and "What are you going to do to my baby? You know, he's going to cry, he's going to be hurt, it's causing pain." So my father said, "You know, don't worry, you're crying more than the baby." Then my father realized that that's probably what happened. Of course, he didn't call this lady a crybaby, you'd never do such a thing, but he probably said something like that, that you're crying more than the baby. And she took it to mean that, oh, he called me a crybaby. My father realized how, again, you have to be so careful when you say something, how a person could take it the wrong way, and even though you didn't mean anything wrong, your person has to be extra special careful. I'll tell you an amazing story that happened with me, that I don't mean to paskin anything for anybody else, but this is a story of what happened to me that I took a great lesson from my Rosh Hashiva. I'm married now, you know, Baruch Hashem, over 10 years, but when I was dating, so I went out with a girl, and he started crying. So you know, I wasn't talking about him, but you know. I went out with a girl, and I realized after, you know, right away, that, you know, she wasn't gonna be for me. She was nice, whatever, but it wasn't gonna be for me. So I told the shatran that, you know, the answer is no, and had a very nice time, but, you know, I don't want to go out again. So, fine, that was it. The shatran, you know, called the girl back. She told the girl no. I don't even know what she ended up saying, but called the girl no. Fine. The next night, my chavrusa gets a phone call. This was the days before cell phones. He has a phone call downstairs, you know, from the payphone in yeshiva. Gets a call. He comes back upstairs to the base medrash, and he says, "You're not going to believe what phone call I just got." I'm like, "What? What could it be?" He says, "I just got a phone call from somebody." He says, "Aren't you Eliezer Kron's chavrusa?" So he said, yeah. So he says, doesn't Eliezer Crow know that your Rosh Hashiva, my Rosh Hashiva was Abzelig Epstein, who passed away a couple years ago, but my Rosh Hashiva was Abzelig Epstein. Abzelig Epstein had a rule that when you go out with a girl, you have to go out twice. You can't say no after one time. He says, doesn't he know that that's the Rosh Hashiva's rule, that you're not allowed to say no after one time? My friend was like, yeah, like, what do you want from me? He's like, he just said no to a girl after one time. Go tell your friend Eliezer Crow that, you know, he has to go out again. My chavrusa comes back upstairs. He's like, listen, I don't know, I'm not getting involved, but like, this is the phone call I got. So I was like, whoa, okay. So I go over, ends up, it wasn't from the father of the girl, but it was a friend of the father of the girl who wanted to do the girl a favor and wanted to get me to go out again. So I spoke to my mashkiach, and I asked him, I said, listen, what should I do? I said no to the girl. You know, I thought, so he said no. He said, the reason why Rav Zelig Epstein had the rule that you're supposed to go out twice, not once, I said, I assumed it's because, you know, hey, you never know, give it another shot, you know, crazier things have happened, even if the date didn't go well, you know, give another chance, you never know. He says, that's not the reason why. The reason is because you can't make the girl feel bad. And the girls, they don't have long lists like the boys a lot of times, and you can't say no to a girl after one time. He says, that's the reason for the rule. So I said, so what should I do? He says, you have to go out again. I said, no, like, maybe you don't understand. I already told the girl no. You know, like, I already, the shadchan already said no. He says, no, I'm sorry. It was right before Rosh Hashanah, and I was her first boy. She had just come back from seminary. He says, you have to go out again. I'm like, you can't make me do that. Please, do me a favor. He's like, no, you have to go out again. And he was my mashkiach, and I listened to him. And it was embarrassing to go out again, but, you know, that's what I did. And then I said no after the second date. But you know, it's not a psak for all boys. But at least for my Rosh Hashiva, that was such a lesson to me, how you have to be so careful how you deal with other people, that, you know, to go, you know, when you go out of town, it's okay, you go out of town, so that, you know, it's understood. You go on an airplane, you go, so you accept to go out twice right away. But a person needs to be so careful. The truth is, when you think about it, it's unpleasant sometimes to think about, and it's scary to think about, but people are always talking about you. I mean, the same way you talk to somebody else and other people's names come up in conversation, good things many times. You talk about other people, but you just realize, and it's unpleasant and it's uncomfortable to think about, but people are always talking about you. Whether it's family, whether it's friends, whether it's people that are not necessarily good friends, but the people are always talking about you. And when you talk about somebody else, not in front of them, it could be a good idea to keep in mind, you know, if I'm talking about somebody, you know, how would I want people to talk about me, not in front of me? You know, we always say things about other people, and, you know, when we say things about other people, we have to be careful. Is this something that I would want someone to say about me, not in front of me? When I'm not there to defend myself. Just yesterday, like I mentioned, I did a bris. I had the schus of doing a bris yesterday in Kew Garden Hills. Stayed by my parents' house in Kew Gardens, and I walked to Kew Garden Hills. I did the bris, and I saw a friend of mine, the old classmate that I haven't seen in a long time. And we were talking. I said, "Oh, how you doing?" He said, "Oh, Eliezer, I hear your name a lot. I hear your name come up a lot of times in conversation." I said, "I hope no lashon hara." So he said, "No lashon hara. Of course not. You know, only good things." But it's scary. You think about it. Like, he's been hearing about me a lot. Okay, so he's a nice guy. He told me that it was all nice things. I hope he's telling the truth. You know, people talk about you, not in front of you. And when you talk about other people, a person really, yeah, it's important, I think. It's a very, something that you could really hold yourself back from saying things about people. If you realize that there are people talking about you as well. You know, like I mentioned, I have this list of teaching in the Beis Yaakov in Passaic. And one of my students is my cousin, is my wife's cousin. So a couple months into the year, we saw each other by a family simcha, and I said to her that you know, does the other girls in the class, do they realize that we're cousins? She said, yeah, they know we're cousins, you know. So I said, oh, so, like, you know, if they have something not nice to say about me, they wouldn't say it in front of you, right? She's like, no, they would say it. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, like, I didn't ask her, like, did they say anything? But, like, you know, she's telling me, quite honestly, you know, okay, I think I'm a good teacher. I think I'm a good rabbi. But kids are kids, you know, even though they're 11th grade, they're 16. But, you know, you always say things about your teachers, about your bear. And we did it when we were teenagers. So, you know, so people are talking about you. And, you know, you need to be careful. I'll tell you a funny story that once happened with me. when I was in Eretz Yisrael before I got married. I learned in the Mir for 3 years before I got married. I went there for 5 years after I got married, but I learned there for 3 years before I got married. And I had a friend in yeshiva, and my friend got married, and he moved back to Eretz Yisrael. And, you know, it's normal in yeshiva, on Shabbos, a lot of times you eat the meals out. The Mir provides meals for all the Bachram, but sometimes I eat in the yeshiva, but a lot of times Shabbos I wanted to eat out. I didn't want to just stay in yeshiva. I was in yeshiva the whole week, so I ate out by a friend of mine. And I introduced myself. I said, my name's Eliezer Krohn. And his wife said, oh, Krohn, are you related to so-and-so? I said, yeah, they're my second cousins. She knew my name was Krohn. Fine, going through the meal, we're eating. Then, you know, my friend, you know, he says a Dvar Torah, and he says a nice story, a beautiful story. Now, this story was in one of my father's books. I think it was in the Maggid Speaks. But I didn't want to make him feel bad, like we're talking about. I didn't want to make him feel bad, oh, you know, the books and the stories in the Maggid Speaks, because he would feel bad that, like, that he didn't realize it's in my father's book, and, you know, as if he doesn't know my father's stories. So it was one of those stories that was just, like, an amazing ending, and just, like, unbelievable, and, like, one of those, like, you would never believe unless you speak to the person it happened to. So my friend said this amazing story, and there were a bunch of other Bachram there, like five or six other Bachram, and one of them said, is this story really true? You know, is this really true? Did it really happen? So my friend said, I think so. They say it's true. I heard it's a true story. I don't know. I think so. So already they're doubting if it's true or not. So my father always checks out every story. He speaks to the person it happened to. And, you know, the Krohn family, we pride ourselves that, you know, all the stories in my father's books are 100% true. So once they were doubting, well, is this really true or not? So I said, no, I know it's true. It's in the Maggid Speaks. So the wife said, oh, that doesn't mean anything. And everyone was, and my friend and all the other brachim, like, yikes, you know, because they knew who my father was. She had not realized who my father was. And, like, you know, my friend, the husband, was like, oh my gosh. And she said, that's your father? I love your father's books. He's so great. You know, your father's a great speaker. And I'm like, eh, it's okay. But I didn't feel that bad, because I know that that's the way people say, oh, yeah, who says it's true? You know, you read a great story in many books, and who says it's true? So I know that that's what people say. But you see, that, like, you know, there's something, like, she said something negative against, you know, my father's book. But it's something, again, I wasn't so-and-so, because I know people say that. But again, people are always saying things about you, you know, hopefully it's always positive. But it's something that, you know, you need to be careful about, when, and it's good to keep in mind when you realize what other people are saying as well. And before I left the house that time, you know, she said, you know, I'm so sorry, again, I love your father's tapes, you know, he's really great. I said, it's fine, don't worry. I was never invited back. But I don't know if I had anything to do with that.
I will tell you, Sheldon's particular talent. And it is a talent. Everybody loved Sheldon. And they thought Sheldon loved everybody. But Sheldon did not.
Right?
Sheldon liked very few.
It's really true. And that's a great character trait.
But to meet Sheldon, you would think he was
your best friend. Right.
But then he would tell me, oh, I don't like this one. I have three friends. That's it. Going, oh my God, Sheldon. These people think you love them. He goes, better they should think I love them.
Yeah, you know, if
he never went into why he didn't like them.
Right, it's not necessary. That would already get into Lashon Hara, you know, 100%. But that's a
right.
If there's negative qualities in other people, you know, it doesn't mean you're allowed to just go around and spread it. And every person has milus, and every person has chesroinus. And you like on yourself. You like to focus on your good character traits, and that's how you should focus on other people. And you don't have to, you know, scream at them and rub it in. And, you know, it's good for people to think, you know, they like you.
That's just a hard thing
to do.
Not for me.
No,
you
would
talk to me.
No, I'm saying about people. Like, never said specific bad things. He would say.
No, he did to me.
Well, okay.
Yeah, but
the thing is, I never said it to them.
Right, it's something that, you know, you always focus on the positive and always giving, you know, positive.
His job was, he felt, to make people feel pleasant and relaxed.
Right, 100%.
And
that's
didn't matter if he liked them or even if they liked him, he didn't care. Right. His idea was to see to the comfort.
Right.
It's just a gift.
Yeah, it's
most
true.
Most people can't do this.
Yeah.
Including me.
The Gemara in Megillah tells us, the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, says that in the schus of the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel, we got redeemed, we were saved by the miracle of Purim, by the Yontif of Purim. So Machzis HaShekel means that once a year on the times of Rosh Chodesh Adar that everyone gave, whether a person was rich, whether a person was poor, they gave a half a shekel to the Beis HaMikdash, and they used that for the sacrifices, for the korbanos. And we do this now, we do it on Tainus Esther, and it's something usually that the husbands take care of for the wives, or somebody other men in the family, that you give three matzos a shekel, but according to the letter of the law, it was one matzos a shekel. And the question is, why is it, and the Gemara explains, because Haman weighed out Aseres Alafim Kikar Kesef, and he weighed out many shekels. So to counteract that, we have the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel, and we were saved. And the question is, what's the connection? Just because we have the schus of Machzis HaShekel, so because of that we were saved by Purim, what does one have to do with the other? It's a nice mitzvah, but what does that anything special to do with Purim per se? So I think perhaps the answer could be the following, that all the commentaries ask, and Machzis HaShekel is coming this week's parasha, Parashas Kisisa. Why do we give a half a shekel? Machzis HaShekel means a half a shekel. Why do we give a half? Why not a whole shekel? So one answer given by the Alshech is that when we give a half, that shows that we're connected to everybody else. That when we give a half, we're not a whole person by ourselves. We need to be connected to our brothers and sisters, the rest of the Jewish nation. And we give a half, and this way the other person also gives a half, and that fulfills, that makes us all as one. That shows the togetherness. And that schus, that is the connection to Purim as we started off with. That Purim, the problem by Purim was that we were mefuzer and mefayrad, that we were separate, we didn't have unity. The mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel, that teaches us to be together, because we have a half a shekel, to be together with the other person to bring us that achdus. And that's why specifically the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel, that we give a half, that we give together, now we are a half of a whole, together with somebody else, together with our brothers and sisters of the Jewish nation, that is able to bring us to the miracle of Purim. And the Gemara says in Shabbos, Daf Peches, that in the times of Purim, it says, Kimu v'kiblu, it's written in Megillas Esther, Kimu masha kiblu kfar, that we accepted the Torah upon ourselves. We had the Torah by Har Sinai, and then in the times of Purim, we accepted the Torah upon ourselves again. What happened when we accepted the Torah the first time? We were by Har Sinai, and the Pasuk says, Vayichan sham Yisrael neged har, ke'ish achad, and Rashi says, ke'ish achad b'lev achad, because Vayichan is Lashon of singular, so the whole Jewish nation was together as one. So that's why Vayichan is singular. And Kimu v'Kiblu, when we accepted the Torah upon ourselves by the times of Purim, once again, you see again the same concept, the same idea, that as a prerequisite to accept the Torah upon ourselves, we have to be all as one. And Rabbi David Cohen from Flatbush, he says that if you look inside the Megillah, you'll notice Wednesday night when we read the Megillah, it says Kimu v'Kiblu. Kiblu is plural, but it's written without a Vav. So it's written Kibel, which is singular, because that's the same idea as by Har Sinai, that even though we're all many people, but the Jewish nation has to be together as one. Ke'ish echad b'lev echad. And that's a prerequisite for Purim. And that's the mitzvos of Purim. When we have Mishloach Manos by Purim, that's to show friendship one to the other. Matanos Lavyonim, to show friendship one to the other. The Purim Seuda, we're supposed to have guests, the Rambam says, by the Purim Seuda, to bring people and to show the togetherness and the achdus. I'll just end with one very stark story, very shocking story, which is a little bit shocking, but people may take it the wrong way, but I think there's a lesson from it as well, that my father has a brother who lives in Lakewood, and he's a big, big tzaddik, but he lets his opinion be known very easily, but he's a tremendous tzaddik. And he was one time in Eretz Yisrael, and he was riding in a taxi. And those of you who've been to Eretz Yisrael, you know the taxi drivers, they're Jewish, they're almost all of them are Jewish, but they're not religious, they're not dati, they're not frum. So my uncle gets into the taxi, and my uncle could see that this taxi driver, that he wasn't religious, but he was in a bad mood. So he wanted to try and cheer him up, he wanted to talk to him. So my uncle says to this taxi driver, he says, you know, we're brothers. He says, so the taxi driver said, no, we're not brothers. He says, why are we not brothers? So the taxi driver says, because you're dati and I'm not dati. You're religious and I'm not religious. So that means we're not brothers. So my uncle says, he says, no. He says, someone, a long time ago, there was a man who taught me that that's not true. That really we are brothers. So the taxi driver says, who is that man that taught you that we're brothers? He says, Hitler. says, because Hitler didn't differentiate between someone who was religious and someone who was not religious. We're all one Jewish nation. And, you know, it's like a shocking statement that, like, that yeah, it's true that Hitler, he didn't differentiate whatsoever. Someone who was religious, not religious, Ashkenaz, Sephardi, child, adult, special needs, not special needs, man, woman, adult, children. He didn't differentiate. You were Jewish, you're all in the same boat. And that's what my uncle was saying, that we're all in the same boat, no matter what. And this taxi driver, after, right before my uncle left, he says, he told him, you're one in a million. So my uncle answered back, he says, no, I'm two in a million, because we're brothers, me and you. And he was showing him that, you know, it doesn't make a difference. And a person, no matter what, like you were saying about, you know, your husband, whether we have people that, you know, maybe some people have more negative quality traits, negative traits than the positive, but a person always has to focus on the positive of somebody else, the same way we would want someone to focus on the positive of ourselves. My father always says, what does it mean, v'hafta l'reacha kamocha? That you should love your neighbor just like yourself. How could you love your neighbor just like yourself? It's impossible. We always love ourselves the best. But the idea is that the same way we look in the mirror, and yeah, we have negative, you know, character traits that, you know, we don't want to focus on, but we want to focus on the positive. And everybody, we want everybody else to focus on the positive as well. And that's something that we want to focus on ourselves, so we need to focus on the other person, kamocha, just like yourself. We want to focus on, we need to focus on the positive of somebody else. And that's one of the many lessons that we could learn from Purim. That the punishment, how the Gezerah came in the first place, the evil decree against us from Haman, was because the Jewish nation was mefuzer, mefayer, it spread out, and Esther knew that the way to bring us back was Leich Kenosis Kol Yehudim, to gather us all together, that hopefully we'll be able to learn from Purim and from this yahrzeit of your husband and your father, that he was also that type of person to bring everybody together, and that should be able to strengthen us to be able to bring us Mashiach all together as one.